House Transportation Committee order. Today is Tuesday, February 6th, 2024. We are in the Barnes Room, Capitol, or Committee Room, Room 124 of the Alaska State Capitol Building. Let the record reflect that the time is 1:04 p.m. Today, we have President Representative McKay, Representative Vance, Representative Stutes, Representative Mina, and myself, Chair McCabe. The staff assisting us today are Recording Secretary Linda Jensen, Moderator Susan Quigley, and Angela Steffel, my committee aide. Please silence your cell phones, as usual. We have two items on today's agenda. House Bill 255, a combined port authority bill sponsored by myself, and HB 282, a bill relating to the disposal of state land sponsored by the House Rules Committee at the request of the governor. We're going to hear 255 first, HB 255 first, followed by HB 282. So first on the agenda, HB 255, we have a committee substitute for the committee's consideration. My staff will provide a walkthrough of the proposed changes. They're minimal, so it will be quick. I will then hand the gavel over to Vice Chair Vance and my staff, and I will present the bill. The presentation will serve as an introduction only, and then we'll set it aside for follow-up meetings. Are there any questions from committee members before we get started, other than how to find your name tag, Representative Mina? Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a quick question. I'm curious as to how we can have a committee substitute when we haven't had a committee meeting on this bill.
There were a couple of grammatical changes, so we could do the committee substitute afterwards. I just thought it would be more expedient to do a committee substitute, or we could just make it a committee bill at this point. So it's
thank you.
Kind of the will of the committee. I'm just presenting it. There's two small grammatical changes, so
thank you.
Yep. Okay, seeing no other questions, Chair Vance, may I have a motion, please?
Chair McCabe, I move committee substitute for House Bill 255, Work Order 33-LS0995/S as the committee's working document.
Okay, so I'll object for the purposes of explanation and discussion. Ms. Morris, can you please put yourself on the record and walk through the changes that we made to the bill?
Thank you, Chairman McCabe. Julie Morris, staff to represent McCabe. I have a summary of changes. There are two very small changes. It's section 1, page 1, line 9. The word rails was included. Page 4, line 21 and 23. In section 30.19.160A, 5 members for a quorum. And then in B, 5 is for the affirmative vote. That's the only changes.
Any questions? Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm presuming that quorum change was from 4 to 5?
It was a mistake. It was a drafting mistake.
Okay, so it was previously 4 and it was changed to 5. Thank you, Mr.
I believe that's correct.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Okay, seeing no objections, I'll remove, or seeing no additional questions, I'll remove my objection to the adoption of the committee substitute. Any further objection? Seeing none, we'll use the committee substitute as our working document. So I'm now going to take a short at ease and hand the gavel over to Vice Chair Vance, and I'll go to the presenter's table so you guys have a great shot at me from there.
We have a real target out there.
We'll take a brief at ease.
Back on the record, Rep. McCabe, would you and your staff place your names on the record and introduce House Bill 255 Version S, an act relating to the Port of South Central Alaska, establishing the Port of South Central Alaska Authority to manage and operate the Port of South Central Alaska and providing for an effective date.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. For the record, my name is Kevin McCabe, representative for District 30 and sponsor of HB 255 with the short title Port of South Central Port of South Central Alaska Port Authority. With me, I have my staff, Julie Morris, who will go over the sectional of this bill after the introduction if the committee so decides. House Bill 255 is a comprehensive and forward-thinking measure designed to enhance the involved port's functionality, ensuring they operate efficiently, transparently, and in the best interests of not just one community, but the entire state and all Alaskans. House Bill 255 establishes the Port of South Central Alaska Authority as a state public corporation positioned under the Department of Commerce for a distinct legal status. The authority's board is expected to oversee its seaport, rail, industrial, and other properties, taking exclusive responsibility for managing financial and legal obligations related to the port. The bill empowers a balanced board comprising state commissioners and public experts to oversee the authority, manage diverse interests, and ensure self-sustaining operations. The board, aided by an appointed CEO, is tasked with financial and legal oversight, seeking appropriation and grants as necessary. Transparency measures include provisions for public meetings, voting process procedures, and executive sessions. The bill grants the authority extensive powers to govern the business of the authority, such as adopt bylaws, appoint trustees, make contracts, property acquisition, and bond issuance. Personnel and labor relations are defined, and the bill aims to establish an effective framework for seamless operations, financial stability, and proper management of port-related activities. To fully appreciate the scope of this bill, it's essential to talk about a few key aspects. First, Alaska is positioned in a unique and strategic part of North America, becoming more strategic as the Arctic starts to open up for development. The Department of Defense uses our ports extensively and plays an important part of the defense of our nation, the Arctic, and Alaska. We have oil, natural gas, large deposits of critical minerals, coal, and precious minerals that need to get to market or to the end user. Those who know me know that I'm a broken record on the absolute vital need for infrastructure to move our resources. Part of any port or rail expansion to move resources or energy needs to be a laser focus on proper, unpolitical oversight and administration of operations. A port authority, then, will be vital to smooth operation of the ports in South Central. Keep in mind that Alaska imports much of its food to feed our state and indeed to explore exportation of our agriculture products. It is imperative our ports and rails function in a collaborative and cohesive manner in that aspect. Let me repeat this. There can be no effective resource development, which our Constitution requires of us, without transportation infrastructure. You've all heard me say it. Even if it's a goat path and a mule with saddlebags, resources need transportation to reach markets, smelting facilities, energy plants, or end users. In conclusion, let me say that Alaska is at a nexus. We are poised to burst at the economic seams if we have all pieces in place to help us thrive. A combined South Central Port Authority will help bring this economic growth to fruition. Ports and rails have built Alaska. We must continue to expand this important infrastructure in the state. A port authority is a vital part of that puzzle. That concludes my introduction, and my staff, Julie Morris, can read the sectional into the record if you desire. It's pretty extensive. This is a big bill, so it might take 15 or 20 minutes or you can all read it, and we will discuss it in a later meeting.
I will seek the will of the committee.
I move to dispense with the reading of the sectional.
A second.
Thank you for preparing the sectional. We can read that. I would like to open up to questions from committee members because I think there's a lot of discussion around just the makeup of this Port Authority, you know, appointment of members, things like that. So, Representative Sumner.
Through Madam Vice Chair to Committee Chair, do you envision this bill facilitating funding for then the regional port as well as the Port of Anchorage and helping revitalize Anchorage's port as well as Port McKenzie? Is this sort of a political unification then, or?
Sure, through the vice chair, through the chair. That's absolutely the idea. I think we are stronger together. I think both ports bring different synergies to the mix. We have different capacities. We have different dock structure right now, and we're in sort of different locations. Even though we're close together across the water, we're far apart via land. And I believe that together we are much better than we are apart. And I think that leveraging each other, leveraging our strengths to bring money to the combined port is one of the best ways to move forward with funding, such as whether it be IGA funding or any federal port of funding or MARAD funding or even Marine Highway funding. Together we are, we will be way better than we are siloing or apart. Hope that answers your question.
Representative McCabe.
Thank you. Through the Vice Chair, Representative McCabe, just curious, I haven't had a chance to review the bill, but would you foresee that if there ever was a Kinnick Arm Bridge, that that the construction and operation of that facility would fall under this organization's authority?
That, through the Vice Chair, that would be that's a dream, frankly. That would be something that would be beyond my wildest dreams, but it would be something that we should work for sure. Many of the bridges in New York are under the New York Port Authority, and the funding for them, you know, right now, funding for a bridge between Anchorage and the Mat-Su is going to be difficult to get. But if you have a port authority, it's a bigger mechanism where a bigger group of people working together to leverage funds or bonds or whatever we need to move that forward. So I would be a fan. I'd be happy to help you with that bill, Representative McCain.
Follow up.
It sounds like this port authority that could be created by this bill could possibly facilitate the acceleration of the Kinnick Arm Bridge at some point in the future.
Through the Vice Chair, absolutely.
Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair Vance. Through the Chair, I have a couple of different questions on the bill. My first question is why these two specific ports, if we're creating a state authority to help maximize the financial leverage for ports?
Through the Vice Chair, so yeah, that's a very good question, actually. It's something we've discussed in our office many times. There was a discussion about a bill years ago about combining the entire state into one port authority, and we just felt starting out it would be very unwieldy to have a board overseeing the professional management of this port that had to have representatives from 6 or 8 or 10 different ports in Alaska. So what we thought is, my idea is, if we got this started with two ports and we started it working, then there would be a venue for other cities such as Homer or Whittier or Seward or Valdez to apply to be part of this port authority and figure out then what kind of representation they would provide to the working board. It seemed to me to be a small step forward and not a big, starting out with a big unwieldy board of 30 people trying to establish all the ground rules and find the funding and that sort of thing. So,
follow up.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Vice Chair Vance. Through the Vice Chair, I believe the short title for the bill is South Central Port Authority. So a hypothetical, if another port from a different region wanted to be part of the authority, would that also require another legislative change?
Through the Vice Chair, possibly. We didn't really think of that. I mean, South Central incorporates a pretty big area. So, you know, theoretically, if Homer or Whittier or Seward wanted to be part of that, and you know, I'm sure they would have to think of if they wanted to be part of it and how that would be structured. They're still South Central. In fact, one of our visions is to have Fairbanks, who really doesn't have water other than the Chena River, but be part of the Port Authority. There are many inland cities, such as in Ohio, that have port authorities. They have established port authorities for themselves as a means to get federal funding and federal bond authority and move their cities forward. So it's entirely possible.
I have another question. Follow up. Thank you, Vice Chair Vance. Through the Vice Chair. So another question that I have is just related to the current undergoings of the port modernization plan at the Don Young Port of Alaska. My understanding is that they're going to be starting their next phase of construction this summer, and all of the different contracts for that financing via the Municipality of Anchorage and securing state plus federal funding have been secured. And so my question is, if we're starting to pursue changing the governance of the Don Young Port of Alaska, how might that impact the current plans that we have for the PMP?
Through the vice chair, my vision is it wouldn't impact it at all. Any of those contracts would still be in place, even if there is a change in structure or change in upper management. Those contracts would still be enforced, just like if you merge two businesses, the contracts that either business has are still in force. And frankly, Port McKenzie is on the sort of the same footing, that they have some ideas and some contracts possibly going forward. So both ports would be bringing that sort of thing to the table, and we would just have to work out the details and the management as we went forward.
One more follow-up.
Thank you, Vice Chair Vance. Through the Vice Chair, is there an idea of what that timeline might look like if this bill were to pass, and to implement the Port Authority, assign individuals to the authority, and transfer the governance structures from the municipalities to the new authority?
Through the Vice Chair, that a lot of that depends on us, and then it also, of course, depends on the city and the borough and negotiations between them to sort of put this together. But I couldn't even begin to speak on any kind of a timeline. My guess is it would take years.
Thank you. I'll hold
on. Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Through the Vice Chair, have you had any conversations with either the municipality or any of the user groups of either port insofar as this Port Authority?
Through the Vice Chair, yes, absolutely. I've been talking to the borough, to the borough port manager, not so much to Anchorage. I will tell you that Anchorage has been a little bit resistant in the past. So I'm offering this as a vehicle for them to maybe come to the table and have a discussion. I think that we are way better together, as I said before, than we are working against each other, working apart, if you will.
Follow up. Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. What would the resistance of the Anchorage, if you happen to know?
Through the Vice Chair, so the politics in the past have been that the there's a finite pot of money, and the Port of Anchorage needs money, and any money that was supposed to go to the Port McKenzie, they thought would be better spent in the Port of Anchorage, and I don't necessarily disagree with that idea, but we're at a point now where the Port of Anchorage is starting on a path to repair and rebuild, and they're getting to the point where maybe it's not as important that they shepherd all the money that they need. And Port McKenzie is becoming a bigger player with the bigger number of people in the Matsu. And I think that now's the time, now's the nexus with the federal IJA and BIL money and sort of impetus out there, as well as Representative Peltola has a bill that dovetails very nicely with this one, and I can't for the life of me remember it right now. Maybe Ms. Morris remembers, but that would all sort of kind of fit together. It just seems like the pieces are lining up nicely if we could all just get on the same page.
One last follow-up, Madam Vice Chair. Thank you. And along the original question, have you had any conversation with any of the user groups?
Through the Vice Chair, user groups such as
Matson or Linden or any of the customers of the port?
So through the Vice Chair, not recently. Last year, we had some discussion, like with the pilots, and there's some discussion about the currents in the Matsu in Port McKenzie. So we've had some discussion about those kinds of things, but no real discussion with user groups other than we have letters and requests for information out to virtually anybody that we think will use Port McKenzie, hoping to get support, and really haven't had much in the way of full-blown discussions with them.
Madam Vice Chair, thank you. This will be my last one. Were the pilots supportive through the chair?
Through the Vice Chair, absolutely. The pilots, keep in mind that Port McKenzie has had the largest ship in the world docked at that port. When I talked to the pilots, they said, yep, it's got a 6.9 knot current, but you're a pilot, Kevin, and you think of a current as a wind current that's continuous for long periods of time. Keep in mind that the current in Port McKenzie is tidal. And so the maximum current happens twice a month for two times a day for a couple hours and the max flood and the max ebb. And he said, we just plan for that. Said it's not a big deal. We plan around it. We don't try to come in and tie up when there's a max current. And if we need a tug there, we put a tug there. And his idea was it was no more of a problem there than it was in the Port of Anchorage. So
thank you, Madam Vice Chair.
Representative Mina.
Thank you, Vice Chair Vance. Through the chair, I have a different set of questions just related to ownership. Right now, the Downing Port of Alaska is under the municipality of Anchorage. It's an asset that's worth billions of dollars. And I'm curious if we're transferring that ownership to the state under an authority, how eminent domain might factor in? Would local governments potentially be reimbursed or paid in terms of transferring that authority to the state? And what would that look like for the impact on local governments?
Can I take that?
Sure.
Through the chair, Representative Mina.
Please state your name for the record.
Oh, excuse me. Julie Morris, staff to Representative McCabe. Those details would have to be worked out. As you go through this process, there would be a transition period. And the port itself would be tax exempt, except for a couple of items. And once you get into the bill and start dissecting the bill, you will see that there is transition in there. Built into the bill.
Follow up? No. Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Is the port currently tax exempt?
That's a good question. I'm sorry. Julie Morris, Representative McCabe, through the chair. As far as I know, yes.
Follow up?
So,
thank you, Madam Vice Chair. I'd be interested to know if that is in fact the case.
Representative McCabe.
Through the Vice Chair, the vision for Port McKenzie as well as the rail spur is to make them tax exempt. They are not currently tax exempt. Port of Alaska and Anchorage, I'm not sure. That's a very good question. I don't think it is, but it's a good question, and we'll check on that.
Follow up. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Through the chair. Well, it would seem to me that there might be some pushback from the municipalities than if you're going to take a large parcel like either Port McKenzie or the Port of Anchorage from being on the tax rolls to off the tax rolls. That's a gut shot to a lot of communities insofar as their revenue. And I'm just curious if that's been addressed at all.
Through the Vice Chair, it's certainly a good point. Excuse me, and I'm not sure. It's a detail we'll have to work out. Port of Alaska, it started out to be Port of Anchorage, and Mayor Berkowitz started us down this road, in my opinion, of state ownership when he renamed it the Port of Alaska, and maybe it's time to complete the deal. The Port of Anchorage is 400-ish acres. The Port McKenzie is 9,000 acres. So as far as valuation of land and valuation of tax structure, it's absolutely something that needs to be You know, we would absolutely have to make the citizens of Anchorage a whole for it, or find a way to repair that if it's a damage, if it's damaging. So,
one last question. Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. I appreciate the indulgence. So, Port of McKenzie would fall under the borough of the Mat-Su borough. Is that correct?
Through the Vice Chair, that's correct.
So, okay. Thank you for that.
Representative McCabe, pardon me, Rep. Sumner, you have a question.
Oh, through the Vice Chair, so I guess I would ask, and maybe I would think I would know the answer. So the land that the port owns that they lease, I would imagine they may charge property tax on the improvements on that land and maybe on value of the lease. But I would think that the tax still being within the municipality of Anchorage or Mat-Su would still be remitted to those entities. Would that not be the case?
Through the Vice Chair, that probably would be that would be the way we would come down, or that would be my recommendation. Absolutely, that the similar to the railroad, you know, that there would be a certain amount of lease money or tax money that's returned to the property owner, which would be the city. We're not trying to take over a bunch of city or a bunch of or borough property. We're just trying to operate a port authority. So there's got to be a way to meld these two together so that we work together, if you will.
Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. So I'm just curious about all this. So of the 9,000 acres and the 4,000 acres, is this property that is all currently owned either by the Mat-Su or by the by Anchorage, or is there private ownership involved in that as well?
Through the Vice Chair, so of the 9,000 acres that the borough owns in Port McKenzie, there is a little piece that is owned by the university. And as far as the 350 or 400 acres, whatever it is in the Port of Anchorage, that's a good question. I think that it is all owned by the city, but I'm not 100% sure.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Appreciate it.
Representative Mina.
Thank you, Vice Chair Vance. Through the Vice Chair, I have a question just related to financing. So my understanding is that with the current ports, the local government helps provide their own mechanisms for financing, as does the state, as does the feds, and having all of those different options is helpful in terms of this goal of maximizing our ability to leverage federal funds. The assembly has the ability to utilize bonds to help with that federal match. And so with this bill, if we're transferring the ownership of the port from the local gov to the state, does that then remove the ability for local governments to utilize their bonding power for a federal match?
Well, through the Vice Chair, no, it shouldn't. I mean, the Alaska Railroad has the authority to use bonds. Our vision is that it would be similar to that. Alaska Railroad has to come to us to get the authority to do it, but that would be absolutely the way to do that, bonding or for federal match.
Thank you. Follow up. Thank you, Vice Chair Vance. Through the Vice Chair, I guess just one additional comment, and this goes back to our earlier discussion on what the price would be for the Don Young Port of Alaska. So I'm looking back into the fiscal note, and I noticed that there's the sentence, the financial assets of the existing Port of Alaska are not known, and whether additional financial support would be needed from the state for the new port authority cannot be determined at this time. So I'm still very curious of what that purchasing price would be for the port in Anchorage, because it's worth billions of dollars. And so to add a multi-billion dollar port modernization plan, I have a lot of concerns about how a change in ownership impacts the financing that's currently done for the port.
And for reference of the committee, we do have Catherine Keith from DOT online to answer questions as well.
Thank you. Through the vice chair, I'm not so sure characterizing, I'm not so sure where you're getting the billions from for the port of Anchorage. That seems like a generalization to me, but it certainly could be. The financial details at this time, we hadn't really, in fact, we hadn't really expected to go this in-depth in questioning. This was just sort of a bill introduction. But thank you. I mean, it's good to get all these fleshed out in these questions because they're certainly ones that we need to be able to answer before we move forward. So, we would absolutely have to value both ports. But keep in mind, this isn't envisioned to be any kind of an adversarial buyout or hostile takeover or anything like that. This is designed in the idea and the discussion that I wanted to engender with this bill was a way for both ports to move forward, whether it be for the bridge or for the rail spur or for resilience, redundancy, for earthquakes, or just for the synergies that we both have for docking different vessels. That largest ship in the world that docked at Port McKenzie, there is no possible way that that could dock at the Port of Anchorage. There's just not enough water underneath the keel. So that's the kind of synergy that we can bring to it. The Port of Alaska, the Don Young Port of Alaska, doesn't necessarily want to bring barges in for repair, to pull them up on the shore and repair them and overhaul them and that sort of stuff. With 9,000 acres, Port McKenzie could easily do that. And so synergies that we can both benefit from.
Representative Suits.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Through the chair. Was that a cargo ship, that the largest ship in the world?
Yes. Through the Vice Chair, yes.
Thank you. Interesting.
Representative McCabe, could you speak to how this authority would be a public corporation of the state and kind of the idea of why that would be an added value and allow for the flexibility that you're seeking?
Yes, Madam Vice Chair. So the idea is similar to the Alaska Railroad. The benefit to the state of Alaska would come in the resource development, jobs, and whether it be agriculture, coal exports, liquid. Just think, if we had a Port McKenzie right now and a port authority, and we could rail natural gas to Fairbanks. With our situation with Cook Inlet natural gas right now, it would just be another card that we had in our deck to solve a short-term energy problem by natural gas cars going to Fairbanks. And then maybe we could do it the other way if we ever had a bullet pipeline off of the North Slope. So there's lots to be considered. And when we're talking about Port McKenzie and the rail spur and everything else, it rapidly became evident to me that it was getting out of the realm of small little Port McKenzie and getting more into the realm of a port authority and a rail spur that could benefit all of Alaska instead of just Port McKenzie, whether that be for a bridge or agriculture export or any of those sorts of deals. South Central, Anchorage, Matsu, Fairbanks, 275,000 people in Anchorage, 110,000 in the Matsu, 95,000 in Fairbanks. That's a significant chunk of Alaska's population that would benefit from us sort of being together and finding a path to benefit this part of the state and the entire state.
So for clarification, is the idea of the Port Authority enable a centralized command to do what the individual municipalities cannot do on their own?
Madam Vice Chair, absolutely. You know, my vision is a board such as the Alaska Railroad Board, and then a professionally managed port authority. So we would have to hire professional managers similar to other port authorities do, and then they would be overseen by a board represented from Matsu, from Anchorage. If we included another city such as Fairbanks, a representative from there as well, that could oversee the Port Authority.
Rep Sumner.
Oh, yeah. So through the chair, I'm not sure if the state taking municipal property would be a taking, but if it is, perhaps the consideration could be the money required for the revitalization of the Port of Anchorage, and then everybody can win. So.
Last question. We do have another bill before us today, Representative Stutzen.
I promise you this will be my last question, but I find this interesting. Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. I appreciate it. So currently there's no railroad facilities there. Then, am I correct? And so you anticipate that this would be part of the whole development? And so then if that's the case, my question, you see how I'm tagging one on the other? Sorry. my question would be, have you worked at all with the railroad on this project?
So through the vice chair, the railroad is sort of a separate discussion right now for the Port McKenzie Railspur. There is a railroad bed there except for 7.2 miles. There is some infrastructure there, such as the turnaround and that sort of thing. Not rails yet, but the land to do that. But as far as having an in-depth discussion with the Alaska Railroad about this, no.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you.
Are you sure?
Well, I am, because I was instructed.
Representative McCabe, thank you for bringing this forward. I know this is a starting point of a much broader conversation, one that we've needed to have on economic development. I have toured underneath the now Don Young Port of Alaska and over at Port McKenzie and seen the differences, the need for repair, but also the opportunity that we have, the realization on how much we rely as a state on that port for our goods and services. But I do like the idea of a port authority that would strengthen our capacity for resiliency. That's something that it's not only more economic opportunities, but I think it could provide the resiliency that we have lacked in the state. So this is a ongoing conversation, and Representative McCabe has taken a ton of questions, but I think if there's anything that he's passionate about, it is this. So we are going to set House Bill 255 aside and bring it back before the committee at a future date. We will take a brief at ease and let Rep. McCabe back in his chair to continue our agenda.
Okay, back on the record. Thank you, committee, for your indulgence, and thank you, DNR, Division of Mining, Land, and Water, for your indulgence on what should have been a really simple introduction. And no, I appreciate the questions. So next we'll hear HB 282. It has a short title of an act relating to access roads relating to state land. It's sponsored by the House Rules Committee at the request of the governor, and we will be given an initial bill introduction and then set the bill aside. To present the bill, we have Rachel Longacre, Chief of Operations, Division of Mining, Land, and Water, and Joseph Burns. You don't look like Joseph Burns. If you could both come forward, and I see you're already here, and put your names on the record and move forward with your presentation.
Good afternoon, Chair McCabe, Vice Chair Vance, and other members of the House Transportation Committee. For the record, I'm no Joe Burns. I'm Brent Goodrum, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. Thank you for the opportunity to present some opening remarks on House Bill 282 on state land disposals. As you all may well know, the state of Alaska manages over 100 million acres of uplands and another 65 million acres of tidelands, all belonging to the people of Alaska. The legislation soon to be presented to you in House Bill 282 would serve to help cut bureaucratic red tape, create flexibility and responsiveness from state departments, and open additional opportunities to put our state lands to work for everyday Alaskans. At a very high level, the bill will serve to streamline land transfer functions from the state of Alaska that would enable the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities and the Department of Education and Early Development to directly transfer land no longer needed for their original purposes to private parties, thus reducing bureaucratic administration and sometimes confusing multi-agency efforts. The bill will also work to create flexible leasing requirements that will allow the department to best decide when surveys are necessary for long-term leases to support applicants' needs and likely lower cost for lessees. It will further incorporate adaptable road standards that allow for more economical pioneer road standards for land access and align right-of-way widths with municipal zoning. HB 282 will also provide necessary financial support for the development of state lands in preparation for sale to Alaskans, as well as extend the contract terms of state land sales to 30 years. The legislation will also help facilitate commercial land sales by introducing a new statute for commercial land leasing and sales. And lastly, will enable expanded agricultural use to be inclusive of activities such as bed and breakfast operations to help offset agricultural development costs. This is an important piece of legislation that can serve to help create new opportunities in making Alaska's lands open to everyday Alaskans. I want to thank you again for the opportunity to present some opening remarks for House Bill 282, and I apologize that I will soon have to depart for another appointment, but I leave you with an exceptional team here at the table. Rachel Longacre, as previously mentioned, is the Chief of Operations for the Division of Mining, Land, and Water, an exceptional and longtime state employee. And Jim Walker will be occupying this seat here momentarily. He's a section leader with the Division of Mining, Land, and Water, and a very knowledgeable leader within our department. So I thank you for the opportunity to present this opening remarks.
Thanks, Mr. Goodrum. We appreciate your remarks.
Thank you.
Welcome, Jim. You put your name on the record, and whichever one of you wants to begin can go ahead and get started.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. For the record, Jim Walker with the Alaska Department of Natural Resources, Division of Mining, Land, and Water, Public Access Assertion and Defense. My colleague, Rachel Longacre, will be making the remarks.
Thank you, sir.
Good afternoon, committee members. Through the chair, for the record, my name is Rachel Longacre. I am the Chief of Operations for the Division of Mining, Land, and Water, with the Alaska Department of Natural Resources. Thank you for inviting me to present on the House Bill 282, the state land disposals, sales, and leases. As an overview, House Bill 282 would authorize the Department of Education and Early Development and the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities to directly dispose of surface land rather than transferring land to the Department of Natural Resources for conveyance. This bill also increases the cap on the Land Disposal Income Fund. It updates and improves provisions relating to DNR's land disposal procedures, including amendments to broaden agricultural incidental uses, and adds a new statute relating to leases and sales of land for commercial development. Section 1 amends the Department of Education and Early Development's authority under Alaska Statute 1407030. The amendment would streamline the disposal process by removing a multi-agency process where currently the Department of Education transfers title to DNR for conveyance. This amendment eliminates the need for DNR to include any restrictions that may be attached by DNR's statutes in the process. Currently, the requirements may be inconsistent with our sister agency's needs. This change would expand eligible recipients beyond just federal and state agencies and political subdivisions. Two recent examples where the Department of Education has either transferred or is in process of transferring title to DNR for further conveyance to a third party includes Japonski Islands, Penrod Hall, and Millerville. Section 3 repeals and reenacts the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities authority under Alaska Statute 3520070. Similarly, this amendment would streamline the disposal process by removing the multi-agency factor, removing the need for DNR to include any restrictions that may be required by DNR statutes. A recent example of this was with the transfer of Telephone Hill. while that was transferred through later legislation, that process was cumbersome by the transfer from DOT to DNR. This amendment still allows DOT to convey land back to DNR if requested to meet the needs of the transfer. The limit to the Land Disposal Income Fund is proposed to increase to $12 million to provide a fund balance that supports the Department in development and disposal of state lands and to offset inflation realized since the fund was established in 2000, nearly 25 years ago. Section 4 amends Alaska Statute 3804022 to increase the LDIF cap. Due to a minimal fund balance caused by fiscal sweeps, revenue versus expenditures, and higher costs to develop land for disposal, there is an increase in concern of a shortfall. DNR is closely monitoring the fund and adjusting costs to general funds, including core costs. DNR proceeds cautiously, only charging specific improvement costs, minimal personnel costs, limited travel, and very specific training to preserve the fund for land development and making parcels available to sell at auction to Alaskans. The LDIF supports both mining, land and water, and the Division of Agriculture within the Department of Natural Resources. The bill further amends current statutes to provide that agricultural activities are not limited to primary use. This allows for supporting uses such as a bed and breakfast operation to support and offset agricultural development costs. There is only so much agricultural land and restrictions are necessary for development. However, further incidental uses related to the agricultural activities would benefit the farmers in having a diversified income stream to support farming. The bill amends Alaska Statute 19-30080 to allow access roads to be built to a pioneer standard rather than all-weather, all-season roads and requires right-of-way width to conform with municipal zoning requirements, but not to a higher standard than a private citizen. This bill further amends the current statute to clarify earnest money deposit requirements and termination of contracts for land sale. It would also increase the maximum term of a contract from 20 years to 30 years. It further amends the statute to add a definition for public auction. This bill also amends Alaska Statute 3804045B to allow commissioner discretion when the best interest finding of the state is decided that a survey is either necessary or at the discretion to provide flexibility while maintaining oversight. This removes the requirement for surveys for long-term leases, 10 plus years, under Alaska Statute 3805070. Surveys and appraisals for long-term leases can pose hurdles for industries seeking state land for development. Current requirements deter development in sectors involving large acreage, such as grazing, renewable energy, and agriculture. Costs associated with surveys and appraisals can be prohibitive, particularly for industries with extensive land needs. A new statute governing the leasing and sale of state lands deemed suitable for commercial development, either within qualified opportunity zones or in other areas nominated and assessed by the state as appropriate for commercial development. This new program would include a land that can be nominated by the public, leasing options to complete requirements for sale and allow immediate commercial activity, and at any time during the term of the lease, a lessee in good standing could apply to purchase the leased lands. Individuals have requested a program to allow for such sales. Sectional analysis. Section 1. Section 1 amends Alaska Statute 1407030A pertaining to the powers and duties of the Department of Education and Early Development, allowing them to dispose of land directly to a private party rather than to federal agencies, state agencies, and political subdivisions. Under current practice, a deed transfers land to the Department of Natural Resources for disposal of the parcel in compliance with DNR's procedures detailed in Alaska Statute 38, the Alaska Land Act. Section 2 amends Alaska Statute 1930080 pertaining to construction standards and maintenance of state access roads. The amendments allow for access roads constructed under Alaska Statute 19 pertaining to providing access to state land that is programmed for surface disposal and to provide access roads at the lowest possible cost, to be of low standard and not necessarily suitable for all-weather use. The amendments would clarify that where an access road to state land intended for disposal is constructed within the boundaries of a municipality, the right-of-way width must conform to the municipality's zoning requirements to the same extent as a private landowner. Section 3 repeals and reenacts Alaska Statute 3520070 relating to the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities authority to vacate or dispose of land. Currently, Alaska Statute 3520070 only permits DOT to transfer such lands to DNR for disposal. The reenacted section would allow DOT to dispose of land to a third party directly. According to the terms, standards, and conditions established by DOT and the commissioner, their commissioner, such land could still be transferred to DNR for disposal if requested by the agencies. This amendment will streamline the disposal process and reduce multi-agency efforts. Section 4 amends Alaska Statute 3804022 pertaining to the State Land Disposal Income Fund. Currently under subsection A, the portion of the fund that exceeds $5 million must be deposited in the state general fund. This bill would raise that amount to $12 million. This would increase spending authority from the fund for a higher development multi-year projects. The increase would also offset inflation since the fund was established in 2000. The $5 million cap has not been adjusted in nearly 25 years. This would be an adjustment to the funding cap, not an increase in appropriation. Under subsection B, the department is granted discretion to request an increase of the deposit limit in its annual statutorily required report to the legislature. Section 5 amends Alaska Statute 3804045B to remove long-term leases from Alaska Statute 3805070 from the requirement to accomplish an official cadastral survey. Currently, Alaska Statute 3804045, the statute relating to survey and subdivision, requires that a survey must be completed for a long-term lease, which is defined in statute as a term of over 10 years. Section 6 adds a new subsection C, to Alaska Statute 3805045 to provide that DNR commissioner may require an official cadastral survey under 045B, before the issuance of a long-term lease under Alaska Statute 3805070. Section 7 repeals and reenacts Alaska Statute 3805055, which establishes public auction or sealed bid as the default methods for sale of state land. The reenacted version divides this section into four subsections to improve readability. Each sealed bidder is required to submit an earnest money deposit of 5% of the bid amount, and bidders who fail to enter into a contract to purchase or default in payment of the bid amount will forfeit the deposit. Section 8 amends Alaska Statute 3805065A to a longer term of 30 years. This longer term allows for lower monthly payments to better assist in higher value land purchases. Sections 9 through 12 amend Alaska Statute 3805065C, D, E, and F to replace the word foreclosure with termination. Foreclosures are an instrument of financial institution rather than a state agency. Sections 13 through 14 amend Alaska Statute 3805065H for consistency pertaining to contracts for state land disposals.
New subsections J and K require an earnest money deposit by persons applying to purchase land by means other than public auction or sealed bid. The earnest money requirement in cases of auction or bid is addressed in Alaska Statute 3805055 as amended by the bill. The new subsections would apply a similar earnest money requirement to applicants for other methods of purchasing land under Alaska Statute 3805. The commissioner may, upon a best interest finding, determine that the purchase price for a parcel of land with existing improvements valued at greater than $10,000 must be paid in full within 120 days of closing. Section 15 amends Alaska Statute 3805 by adding a new section, Alaska Statute 3805086, pertaining to leases and sales of land for commercial development. The new statute supports commercial or industrial development of state land nominated and assessed by the state as appropriate for commercial development. Land could also be nominated by the public. The statute includes a process for requesting proposals from prospective lessees, accepting bids, and then entering into a contract to lease. The statute allows the lessee to apply to purchase the leased land at any time during the lease if the lessee has used the land for commercial development consistent with their proposal. The new section also requires notice to Native Corporation stakeholders. Section 16 amends Alaska Statute 380521, subsection D, to allow uses on conveyed agricultural land that are not inconsistent with and do not limit its use for agricultural purposes. Currently, Alaska Statute 3805321D prohibits the Commissioner of DNR from limiting use of land for purposes incidental to and not consistent with agricultural purposes. This section would eliminate the requirement that uses be incidental to agricultural purposes. Section 17 amends Alaska Statute 3805965 to add the definition of public auction to expressly include online auctions in addition to oral outcry auctions. Section 18 repeals Alaska Statute 3805065B regarding the contract for sale for land sold under Alaska Statute 3805057 and the terms of installment payments. This is a conforming amendment to account for the changes made under Section 13 of the bill. Section 19 provides an immediate effective date under Alaska Statute 0110090C. This bill creates a new statute providing for the disposal of state lands deemed suitable for commercial development through a lease-to-sale program. To implement the new commercial leasing and disposal program, the Department of Natural Resources will need to evaluate land nominations, identify land offering areas, prepare documents relating to planning and classification, reclassification of lands to be offered, prepare best interest findings, title due diligence, and report issuance and provide appraisals of land. This will, at a minimum, require 2 full-time natural resource specialists, 2 full-time natural resource specialists choose, and 1 permanent full-time appraiser.
Thank you. So I think I have a couple questions. Who's first? Representative Stutes.
Thank you. Did I understand you to say in section 7 that it requires, if you want to be a bidder, it requires a 5% of the value that is non-refundable whether or not you win the bid?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, through current procedures and as well as addressed in Section 7 of the bill, a 5% deposit is required for a successful bidder. If they don't complete their bid and move to purchase, they will default the 5%.
But if I follow up, Mr. Chair, please.
Representative
Stutes. One time. So just so I'm clear on that, because I misunderstood you then. So if I put in my 5% and I'm not a successful bidder, then I get my 5% back. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that is correct.
Thank you.
Representative Sumner.
Through the chair, So the language replacing foreclosure with termination has me a little bit confused. So it looks like a lot of this is in relation to installment payments for a purchase. And I just wonder if there's a purchase and it has installment payments, title does transfer, right, unless it's some sort of lease sale. And so if you just terminate the contract, title does not necessarily revert back to the state, I would think. I mean, that would be actually what you would call a foreclosure.
Through the chair, Representative Sumner, land sale purchase contracts actually don't transfer any equity in the purchase until the final payment. It is a long-term purchase agreement between the state and the purchaser. It's an instrument of facilitating that transfer, unlike a mortgage where you would gain equity and have vested interest in that regard. You must complete the contract in order to gain title all the way to the last payment. The language change from foreclosure to termination is to support that that is a purchase agreement and not a mortgage. And so termination would be more appropriate.
Okay, thank you. So it is sort of like a lease sale, and the final payment is the transfer, essentially, of the title.
Through the chair, Representative, it's a long-term purchase agreement, correct.
Representative Vance.
Thank you. Through the chair, I have a couple of questions. The first one is on Section 13, and I'm having trouble seeing if this is new language. And it's regarding the agriculture uses in the installment payments may not exceed 9.5%. Is that what it currently is? And is that a usual?
Through the chair, a Representative Vance. Yes, that is the current language. That is not being amended through this bill. Other land sales, non-agricultural land sales, have a cap of 13.5%. I believe I can follow up with the committee on that distinctly, but agricultural land sales, the interest rate is set at a lower bar to help facilitate the activities and make it more economical.
Thank you for that. Follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Vance.
My next question is Section 14, subsection K, that says for a parcel of land with existing improvements valued at greater than 10% must be paid in full within 120 days of closing. My question is that realistic on greater than 10,000 they must pay in full?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, the situations that we've encountered recently is that land that's being purchased through the state of Alaska may have improvements on it, and for one reason or another is returned to the state. There is a liability associated with those improvements that the state is assuming. If the next purchaser damages or creates higher liability, then the state is still on the hook for that as we retain the interest until the final sale. Requiring that the purchase be completed within the 120 days would allow for a responsible purchaser of that infrastructure.
And one last
follow-up, Representative Vance.
Thank you. On Section 15, there's talking about leases and sales of lands for commercial development. Is commercial development defined in this area of statute so that there's a clarification of what DNR deems commercial development?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, there is not a definition in this bill or specifically in this section. I will have to follow up with you if there is a Title 38 definition of commercial. We do have definitions internally of what commercial activities deem. One of the benefits of this new proposed program is that we'd be working under federal definitions of a qualified opportunity zone, and there is some communication within that of what is commercial activity.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Stutz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. I just am curious with all of these new regulations that if there is a sale of state property, that it will go through the appropriate public process that is required with the public notification and the availability of the property. So the average Alaskan would have an opportunity to make a bid on this property as well.
Yes.
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, this bill in no way amends any current existing processes where we do have a best interest finding that does go through the public notification process. I believe you're referring to Alaska Statute 3805-045, and that is still in place and would be included in any of these decisions where a disposal of state interest, whether it be a lease, sale, or otherwise.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. Through the chair, I have two questions. The first is pretty basic. I'm just curious what additional background there is for this bill. I know it's seeking to accomplish a couple of things in terms of upgrading the statutes and having flexibilities for DOT and some other departments. Has this been something that the administration has been working on for a while to clean up the statutes for the state land disposal process? And additionally, have there been particular projects that have faced a barrier because of the current statute?
Through the chair, Representative, to answer your first question, yes. Similar bills have been introduced, and for one reason or another, they had additions made to them that created hurdles and the timing in the process. To answer your second question, yes, the Department of Natural Resources has received inquiries, multiples per year, of either commercial lease-to-sale programs, such as the new program would establish, agricultural land sales where incidental uses related to ag could support ag development, as well as expanding leasing opportunities to not require survey for, say, a wind farm that would not necessarily know its footprint within the first few years of the lease, but would still be able to define the boundaries of where that lease operation would, and then could further reduce or expand as necessary through the same public process.
Thank you.
Follow-up, Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair McCabe, through the chair. Thank you. That's helpful for understanding the bill. I have another question, perhaps not for DNR, but just in general. I would love to know, what are the lands that are owned by DOT and also owned by deed that would be impacted by the bill?
Through the chair, Representative, I can certainly follow up with that for the committee.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, you're off the hook. Seeing no additional questions, thanks for those who appeared before the committee today, Mr. Walker, Ms. Longacre, Joe Burns back there, who was supposed to be here, according to my script, and of course, Mr. Goodrum. So seeing no questions, we'll set this bill aside and bring it back for future consideration and public testimony. Our next committee meeting is scheduled for next Thursday, February 8th, where we'll hear from the Alaska Railroad with a presentation, Alaska Railroad Investing in Alaska's Future. See no other business before the committee. We will adjourn. Let the record reflect that the time is 2:14 p.m.